in the late 80s, of course, you were in Mr. Big, and you had a big hit in America with the song To Be With You, but you guys really became massive in Japan. To what do you attribute that?
Well, I attribute it to kind of the Spinal Tap syndrome. A lot of people think when you go to Japan, it's automatic. You go there, and they're just going to love you, so no matter what you do, because you're... And to me, it's a little tinge of, I wouldn't say go so far as to say racism, but culturalism, maybe, to think that they don't think it through and like what they like because it's good. So people think, well, you go to Japan, you're an American band, there's a couple of blonde-haired guys in the band, you're gonna kill. Not true. Simply not true. So when we went to Japan, we worked our asses off. We shook every hand, kissed every baby, every autograph session. We arrived early, left late. We did every time the company said, "We got some promo. Do you guys want to do it?" You go, "Yeah," and give us more. You know, we just really went out of our way. And when we played, they were so responsive to us initially that we really gave back. We really pushed back, and we really tried our best to, really give them the absolute best we had. Not that we wouldn't everywhere, but we just didn't want to. We never took it for granted and thought it was automatic because we were an American band and now we're going to automatically be huge there. It's just not true. I know some bands. I remember speaking to a very, very famous drummer in a very huge, famous metal band saying to me, "Yeah, we went to Japan. It was, boy, the audience just sat there in between the shows. It was kind of a drag, don't you think?" And I'm thinking, geez, we've had girls pull their tops off in Japan, which is unheard of. And the audience be so loud, you know, we had to think of new ways to intro the songs because we couldn't hear the count off. You know, it was so we really worked hard, and they are just wonderful, fabulous people, and they do watch you like a hawk, and you are under a microscope.
Now you've played with Joe Satriani and your friend Steve Vai on the G3 tour, but at what point did it occur to you to form your own version of that B x 3, basically the bass tour?
Yeah, that was Stu Hamm's idea. Stu's a good friend of mine, a tremendous player. Jeff Berlin also, a very dear friend and a great, spectacular player. Stu called me and said, "Let's do a B x 3," and I said yes. And it was it turned into one of the best things about that tour was hanging out in the van and telling stories and talking, even about music and about playing. And you know, one of the best DVDs that never got made. It would have been great because it was really, and Jeff is a very opinionated guy, and he's talented enough to have a strong opinion and back it up. You know, he knows his stuff, and it was interesting to see him and Stu added a little bit in a friendly, fun, competitive way, and then me kind of being the referee in the middle sometimes, and we had a riot. It was just a fantastic time, and it was a great experience to be able to watch Stu play every night, watch Jeff play every night, and then get up, do my thing, and then play together. It was very cool.
Now, let me ask you about that, B x 3. I mean, can there be something as too much bass?
Oh, see, asking a bass player, he'll say no. He'll say no for sure. Yeah, there can be if you don't orchestrate it correctly. I mean, when you have 20 violins in a, I don't know how many violins they have in a string section. When you have 20 violins, geez, that's a lot of violins. That's got to be awful squeaky, you know. But when it's orchestrated correctly and done right, of course, it's beautiful. Same with bass. You can't have a whole bunch of low end just due to the nature of the size of the frequency sine wave. It just, things rattle around together. So you got to be real careful at how you play things. So when we play together, you know, one guy takes one part, another. You know, we stay out of each other's way and abbreviate our parts so that they are woven in between rather than just, again, like I said earlier, we're not playing on top of each other so much as playing with each other. So I'll step back and stop playing, you know, for half a measure or so, and then pop in with a little thing and then step back again and hear where it's going and then take it somewhere else. And it becomes very interactive. But if you've got three low E strings playing three different notes behind you, you're asking for trouble.
Now, I have seen a video of you guys doing Spinal Tap's Big Bottom.
Yes.
And you guys sing beautifully, but that just seems like the most perfect choice of songs for you guys.
Yeah, again, I got to give credit to Stu for that idea. And it's funny because Jeff at first, I don't know if I want to play Big Bottom, you know, because Jeff is a jazz guy, and rightfully so. He's just a brilliant player. But eventually, we got him into the comedy mode, and he is also a hilarious guy. So we, when he sings, "I want to sink her with my pink torpedo," the whole place split a gut. It was hilarious.
It is a really funny video, but you guys do really do the song justice.
Well, thank you very much. It was a cool thing. And you know, a lot of my songwriting and playing is very, very serious to me. And but also, I really try to yin and yang the balance it out I'm an amateur stand-up comedian too. So.
Well, speaking of your own playing, now I understand you're recording a new solo album.
Yes, I am. Right as we speak, practically.
What can you tell me about it? Are you singing all the tracks on it? What can we expect?
I'm going to do about 50-50, like I did on Cosmic Troubadour, my last solo record. I'm going to have a couple guests on there. I haven't gotten the only guest so far who's actually played has been a brilliant solo by my good friend Paul Gilbert from Mr. Big. He did this great solo and a really cool instrumental piece. Just great. It was wonderful working with him again, too. He's just a great guy. And a couple other singers and guitar players I might try and add on here. I don't want to mention him his name because they actually haven't done it yet. And, okay. You know, about how that goes. Somebody at the last minute can't make it, and then it looks like I was being untruthful. But other than that, I'm singing about half of it. And I also did one piece on there. Which is actually an adaptation of a viola solo from the Brandenburg Concertos, and I learned pieces of it way back in the 70s. I used to always fiddle around and try and pick off Bach lines and ideas by ear because I don't read music and don't know any theory or any of that stuff, so I had to rely wholly on my turntable's ability to slow down to 16 RPM. To be able to pick the notes off, and even then it was questionable. So I went back and revisited it and actually learned the whole thing.
Speaking of releases, now I know you've had a long association with Yamaha and your Attitude bass.
Yeah.
But I understand you have a new Billy Sheehan bass from Yamaha coming out this summer, I believe?
Exactly. Yeah, they did the version 3 of my Attitude bass, which is my main bass that I play all the time. Basically, in version 3, they did silver-soldered electronics. My name is finally on the bass. And a couple little different cosmetic things. So it's basically the same bass. It's done two different colors now. We've done, this would be our sixth color combination we've done on this bass. And that's my stable, rock, solid bass that I use all the time. Now, when I first started with Yamaha, I did a BB series bass. And the BB series has always been very popular with Yamaha. It's a great instrument. I'm holding one in my hand right here now.
Oh, wow.
And they have they did a BB series that was adapted from my very first Yamaha that I did with the company back in 86 or so. And I remember that was the bass that I held on the cover of Guitar Player magazine when they were kind enough to put me on the cover of that. And I won their poll and stuff. And it was pretty cool. I think I had it on the cover of Guitar World, too, at some point. I have it up on my wall, the blow-up of that cover. But it was one I used during the Roth era there. So they did a version of that bass, and it's just a really slick, smooth, silky, solid piece of work. Yamaha's quality control is second to none. And we put a neck position pickup on it, so it had really just tons and tons and tons of super low end. And it's a beautiful, beautiful instrument. I'm really enjoying.
Now I understand the idea behind this bass also is to make it more affordable to the average player.
Yeah, because the Attitude bass, because it's a special thing when you're doing it in the production line, you can't just, pop them out by the hundred, and so therefore the production takes a lot more, so the bass inevitably ends up costing more. And a lot of people use the Attitude bass. I get email from people every day from all over, and I want to start an Attitude Bass Players website so we can all, network and trade parts and tweaks and stuff like that, which I will do. But the BB series is a little bit more in line with what Yamaha does as its normal production. So the costs are down without the quality being compromised at all. And it's just a rock-solid, beautiful bass. A couple of people have come over and tried it out, too, and everybody's given it a thumbs up. It's very cool.